being in a proper Free Methodist church because I feel so far away from all of you. And if you don't get that joke, you should read our polity. Anyways, last time we were here, we were just looking at the date to verify, was April 23rd, 2023. Is that right? Which feels so far away to me. That is mind-blowing that it's been over 2 years since we've spoken to you. And I just want you to know that God is doing some incredible things. When we spoke to you last, we had just started our church plant in La Grande, Oregon. And we had no idea the stuff God was going to do and put us through, to be quite honest with you. There was so many victories, and you're going to hear some of those today. So many incredible things, so many hard things. But I just want to start by thanking you for being such a support to Jordan and I. We feel the love of First Church when we gather. Our people feel your love, and we just appreciate you guys. So thank you so much for being such a light to us and to our ministry. When we were here last, we actually asked you to pray about a housing opportunity because we hadn't yet moved from Pendleton to La Grande, Oregon. And that is about a 45-minute drive, depending on how you take the dangerous mountain pass that lies between there. So we were driving back and forth every Sunday to do that. And thankfully, 2 years later, I can tell you God answered those prayers for a housing thing. And we're all good now. We live in La Grande, but we hadn't moved there yet. And I want to tell you a story. I want to start today by telling you a story about that in-between time when we existed, between living in Pendleton and doing church planting work in La Grande and moving back and forth and crossing back and forth over, because we hadn't rooted ourselves in the community yet. And if you have met us, if you know anything about us, you know that there's one super special and important person in my life that we could not move to La Grande without making sure he was well taken care of. And so today, I want to tell you a story about my dog, Chancellor. Look at that good boy. Chance is an incredible dog, but we lived kind of out in the boondocks in Pendleton, and so he had all this room to run and play and do stuff. And one of his favorite activities when we lived in Pendleton was driving up to the summit-ish of the mountain in a place called Meacham. If you know Eastern Oregon geography, you may have heard of that, but if you don't, I see a couple nods. Okay. There's a place called Meacham up there that's just got some of the most beautiful scenery. It's gorgeous and all kinds of area for a dog who loves to play frisbee to run around with. And his favorite time to go was in the dead of winter when it's nearly impossible to get up the summit because he just loved the snow. And you can see him, that's him on the top of Meacham waiting for his frisbee to get thrown for the 400th time that day, I have no doubt. And so we would periodically, as we lived in Pendleton over the course of 7 years, take Chance up to play on Meacham. And it was, I kid you not, his favorite time in the world to do that. And as we were preparing to move over to La Grande, one of the days that I kind of had off from the Pendleton church where we were sort of working still and yet preparing to go over to La Grande, I decided, hey, I'm going to spend the day over in La Grande, get to know the community a little bit, walk around. I'm going to take the dog with me because he's got nothing better to do, right? He's a dog. And I want to make sure he likes La Grande. Yeah, I know this is crazy for me to tell you that I want to make sure my dog likes the place where I'm moving to, but I'm a millennial, deal with it, we're moving on. So I throw Chance in the car, load him up, we drive up the mountain, and as we're approaching Meacham, and this is important, Chance has never been past Meacham in his life before. He was born and raised, he's a born, bred, raised Pendleton puppy, and he's never been past Meacham in his life. He starts to lose his mind because the exit is getting close. He knows where we're going. He's been here a million times, and he's like, we're going to play. And I had to be the bearer of bad news and say, hey, we're not getting off at this exit, buddy. We're gonna keep going. And as soon as we passed the exit, he started yapping and barking and going nuts and jumping at the window and doing all the things that a dog that's really excited but thinks the one opportunity I'm ever going to get to play in my life is never going to happen now, right? That's what his little brain can't comprehend. And you have to understand that that's out of like immense love for this thing. This is his favorite thing in the world to do. And from Meacham down to La Grande, you've still got like a solid 15 minutes, 20 minutes, depending on how the roads are. So it was a long time in the car of Chance freaking out, losing his mind, trying to figure out why the heck we would go past Meacham. What could possibly be past Meacham that would be worth going for? And one of the things, as I'm getting so frustrated in the car, I just remember blurting out in the car was, Chance, I promise you there are better things past the mountain than what's on the mountain. And that stopped me for a minute because I went, do I really believe that? Like in my faith walk, if you think about, we talk about getting the mountaintop experience with Jesus and experiencing all these incredible, wonderful things. But there are better things past the mountain than are on top of the mountain. And in that moment, as I was contemplating this move to La Grande, I was going, do I believe there are better things waiting for me in this city that I've never been to and don't know? And don't know the people and the culture and where I'm even going to live than there are behind me? In the place that I was safe and secure, had a loving community around us, had secure job opportunities, you know, like none of that was in La Grande at that point. And so it really was this moment where I felt the Holy Spirit speaking to me and saying, there are better things past the mountain than there are here. And when we got into La Grande, I'm happy to report, we found that one of the biggest dog parks there. Chance had a great, incredible Frisbee time. And I just want to tell you that Chance loves La Grande more than he ever loved Pendleton. I know this doesn't matter to you, and I know that he's a dog. But he's got way more dog friends in Pendleton than he ever had. He's got, look, I'm a millennial. He's got way more dog friends in Pendleton than he ever had. He's got this park that he basically thinks he owns, I think, that we take him to every morning. We took him there at 4 o'clock in the morning this morning because he has to go to his park to play Frisbee and run around. More space than he had in Meacham. Jordan can attest, she's still a little sleepy from it. He's got all these amazing, wonderful things that he never would have experienced if we hadn't moved to La Grande. And in my frustration of saying, Chance, there are better things ahead than what lay behind, I could have never imagined that that was going to end up proving to be true, not only in his little dog life, but in my life too. So when James assigned me this passage to teach on today, Galatians chapter 4, I was really excited because this is where Paul begins to get I'm going to be teaching from Galatians 4, verses 8 to 31, but we'll zero in on a couple verses here if you want to open your Bibles there. I was excited because this is where Paul's getting mad. He's getting frustrated at the Galatian people, right? He's worried about them. If you read this passage from start to end, verse 8 to 31, Paul has this deep-seated concern for what's going on in their church and in their life right now. And he's frustrated because they seem to be looking backwards or going backwards or thinking about going backwards. And so I just want to take a moment and read verses 8 to 11 with you. They'll be up on the screen in the translation I'm reading from, which is the Common English Bible. If your translation differs, you're wrong, but that's okay. And here we go. Starting in verse 8. At the time when you didn't know God, you were enslaved by the things that aren't God's by nature. But now, after knowing God, or rather being known by God, how can you turn back to the weak and worthless world system? Do you want to be slaves to it again? You observe religious days and months and seasons and years. I'm afraid for you. Perhaps my hard work for you had been for nothing. Ooh, I love when the air conditioning kicks off right at the moment that I wanted to make a pertinent point. Those are harsh words from Paul to a people that he loves deeply. He's concerned about them. He says, you're going back to the weak world system, right? Now you are known by God, and you have known God, you've experienced God in his fullness, and yet you seem to want to go backwards to a system that has enslaved you. So I want to pause for a second and talk about why that worries Paul. See, looking backwards to this weak world system, when we read that wording in Christianity, we often have a tendency to say, yeah, the weak world system, all those sinners and losers out there, outside of the church, who are doing all the bad, terrible things that we don't want to talk about, all the drug addicts and the hippies and the yada, 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 the people who look like James Lehman, you know, right? I've got to take my shots while I get them. We tend to think the world system is out there, but in reading Galatians carefully, you've got to understand that Paul is not worried about them adapting some system out there that is outside of the church. He's worried about them going back to the faith of their youth. He's worried about them looking back at the Judaism that they grew up in, at the law. If you have been reading along in Galatians, which I think you have been, Paul has been talking about this law that they were given by God and the good things that it has done and the bad things that it has done. And he is now telling them this religious system of your youth that you've been brought up in is enslaving you. It is a weak and worthless world system. That is not a system that the outside world has created and caused and they are stepping into. This is not a takedown of some government agency outside of the church. This is a takedown of the faith you grew up with. And that has got to be hard to hear. I am a sentimental person by nature. I do not like when people tell me about all the bad things about the thing that I love from my youth, right? I want to hold on to those things. I want to think the world was better back in the 90s when I grew up than it is today. But this is what Paul is attacking here for these people. And so you've got to understand the weight with which Paul comes at this, because looking backwards to the religiosity that they grew up with is what is enslaving these people right now. And it's for freedom's sake that Paul wants these people to know this. Right? He goes on to give an allegory later on in this text. If you read verses 21 to 31, we're not going to read those right now, but he talks about Hagar as the slave woman and Sarah as the free woman. And he literally says, these are an allegory, right? I want you to put yourself in the place of a first century Jewish believer who hears the story that you grew up with of Sarah and Hagar, right, that you believe is fundamental in the Word of God and unchangeable and happened literally as it says in the book of Genesis, and then you hear someone come in and say, and these are an allegory. Ah! That's got to rub you the wrong way. I imagine that it rubbed them the wrong way. And Paul is not discounting what they believe to be true. He's not saying, oh, this isn't a true story. What he is saying, though, is that they are meant to learn a lesson from this passage that they have yet to learn. They haven't figured out yet what it means to be free. They want to be under the slave system of Hagar, right? The old covenant, as he says, instead of the new promise that is welcomed through Christ, represented by Sarah. And I would be really surprised, or not surprised, I would be really... I'd be really upset with myself if I didn't tell you that in so many of our church circles today, in American Christianity, we so often want to be under the old promise. We want to be under the law, the covenant, the way that religion was in our youth. I grew up in a deeply strict legalistic religion that was very clear. This is bad and this is good, and you do not ask questions about the in-between because there is no in-between, right? And I'm telling you that that is the religion of our youth. For some of you, it's more youthful than my religion was. But we so often want to look backwards and cling to those things that formerly enslave us because they're comforting. When the world is black and white, it's easy to know, okay, if I just don't do this, 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 and this, and I do this, this, and this, and this, then life is easy, right? If I'm just not a drug addict or a deadbeat dad or a rioter or, you know, insert thing here, then I'll be good in God's eyes. If I just give my 10% to First Church so that James can have a really comfortable salary, and then I show up to all the potlucks and the banquets, and I serve on the kitchen team, you know, when they need help, then God will be pleased with me. But Christianity is not a religion of black and white. That's what Paul is teaching here. Christianity is a religion that exists in the margins of the gray. Jesus came for freedom's sake. That's what Paul will say in the next section here as you continue on. And Paul defines freedom through these verses. He says, but after knowing God, or rather being known by God, how can you turn back to that weak and worthless world system? Knowing God and being known by God, that is freedom. And that is not the American ideological freedom that we see play out in our country, where I can do whatever I want and don't you dare tread on me. The freedom that Christ offers is to be known fully. And that is a beautiful, scary thing. It's beautiful because it means that the God of the universe wants your whole self. The God that we gather here to worship today wants you to be able to express your whole and complete self. It is scary because it means that my neighbor also gets to express their full and complete self. It risks everything in this system to hold things together. And it often leads to what if questions. What if the church changes? What if I lose something I love? What if God is lying? What if I have to give more? See, the system that Paul is proposing that these people go to, a system of knowing God and being fully known, is a system that asks everything of us. And it means that our comforts will have to look different. It means the religiosity of my youth that was censored on centered on everything being so black and so white may be comforting, but it's a failing system. The church in America doesn't get to where it is today without the religiosity that I grew up with. The church in America doesn't get to the numbers that it does today without the religiosity that you grew up with. And that's not a bad thing. I want you to hear that. There are beautiful and incredible parts of that. But when we look backward and say, oh, I just wish things were the way they used to be, we're asking to return to slavery. We're asking to return to a system that can't possibly save us. See, the modern church has to move from a system of rigid legality and law-seeking and comfort-seeking into a system where people are invited to be known by God fully and to be known themselves. And that means that we have to risk some things. One of the most prominent theologians of the 1930s, when the world was crazy and on fire and fascism was on the rise, and the church was trying to figure out where do we exist in what the new world is going to be. His name's Karl Rahner. You may have never heard of him, but he's an extremely prominent theologian. In the 1930s, he said this. He said, in the days ahead, you will either be a mystic, one who has experienced God for real, or nothing at all. The future Christian will either be a mystic or he will not exist. If you look at the world that we are now living in, the future Christian doesn't exist in a lot of places. We're in the PNW. We're in what we used to call the nun zone, right? This is where everybody left the faith, walked away, deconstructed, and now we're seeing generations of people who are raised without any sort of faith or religious identity. Carl saw it coming. The future Christian wasn't going to exist if they couldn't be someone who experienced God for real, a mystic, as he called them. So what does the future church look like? For Paul, the future church was a church that refused to look backward given the temptation. A church that refused to say, oh, it was comforting existing in the old system and I just want to go back. I want to be in that same system that kept Hagar enslaved. Instead of looking forward to the promise of who Christ was, instead of allowing people and inviting them in to a God who loves them so much, we just sang it, right? How he loves us. He loves us so much that he wants to fully know us in all of our brokenness and allow us to fully know him. And if people are not invited into that in your church, then I don't know that you're being the church. We've got plenty of churches in America that aren't being the church, where people are not invited into being fully known and fully being themselves. And so today, I just want to offer you this challenge, and I can't make the distinction for you whether First Church is that or not, but I want to offer you this challenge. If the church is going to persist in the future, if we're going to continue on, things are going to have to look a little bit different. To quote Carl, you will either in the days ahead become a mystic or you will be nothing at all. To quote another prominent theologian, C.S. Lewis once said that there are better things ahead of us than any we may leave behind. To quote my favorite dog, there are better things on the other side of the mountain than what's on the mountain, where we're headed. I want to close my time here by telling you a couple of stories about what's going on at Hub City, what I believe the future church is beginning to look like, right? Because I want you to see two things: what the future church can be, and also what your role has been in making that a reality. Because as Pastor James said, you guys have so faithfully supported us, and you have given in some incredible ways to make amazing things happen at Hub City. And I want you to share in the joy of the reward that is happening. I want you to see the harvest of what your faithfulness is producing. But I want to warn you, before we do this, that it does not look like a church of the 1950s. So if that's what you're hoping to see, I'm about to disappoint you, so I'm sorry. Also, I'm going to disappoint those who are on the live stream. In order to protect some identities and so I can speak fully candidly, I'm going to ask that we mute the live stream right now, and we will unmute it after I'm done telling some of these stories. So I'm apologizing. They will have to just watch me walk around and move. live stream now and welcome them back. Like C.S. Lewis said, there are better things ahead than any we may leave behind. And I know it's scary to look at the landscape of America, to look at what's happening and go, I don't know how the church survives. The church does survive. The church moves forward. The question is, will we move forward with it? In the days to come, you will either be a mystic, one who has been known fully by God, or you'll be nothing at all. Thank you, First Church. Oh, I should, before I walk away, I have one more slide. Would you throw it up there? If you would like to know more about Hub City or figure out how you can be a part of it, commit to pray with us. Stay in touch with us at hubcitylegrand.com. You can sign up for our newsletter through there to see what's going on. You can come and see us. If you would like to give from your abundance, you can scan the QR code. Thank you, First Church, for welcoming us, and we appreciate you guys so much. Go ahead, worship team, and come on up.
Thank you, Chris. It's really easy to fall into the trap of thinking that we can do it. If we just work harder or try harder, we can do it. But the reality is, Jesus is all there is to it. Seeking his face and making him the priority in our lives. So please stand with us as we close with one more song. It's just a prayer to do just that.